Welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour for another week. On this show, after the very big excitement of the last show that we did 2 weeks ago, which was our 50th ever episode, which was very noisy and there was a lot of streamers and noises, which we all hope you enjoyed. We hope you enjoyed listening to that because we had a lot of fun making it. We're doing something slightly different this week. If you have been listening to the Blackshaw Arts Hour, you would know that we've been involved in the Horror Festival, the London Horror Festival. We put on Black Shuck and we finished the run of that. And then on Monday just gone, we did our second Scare Slam at the Old Red Lion in Angel, which was a huge success. We had a whole bunch of people telling very spooky stories to a very good audience. And we recorded the entire thing. So we are going to play that for you in this hour of the show in its entirety, which is very exciting. And if you're worried about what we're going to be doing next week or the week after, in 2 weeks' time, we will be back with a full studio of people. We'll be doing more reviews, more arts things, but we're having a little bit of a break. And we thought that if anyone couldn't make it along to the Scare Slam, then what better can we do than play it for them on the radio? You might not be able to see the people, but you can hear the spooky stories. And just a slight word of warning, this is a bit spooky. The content is a bit scary, might be a little bit sensitive for young people or people who are easily frightened. So just be aware of that. But this is the Blackshaw Arts Hour, and we are playing the Blackshaw Scare Slam at the Old Red Lion, recorded live on Monday.
That's very exciting. I hadn't even said anything yet, so although I do feel like you're setting a bit of a high bar now, so if you could all just pipe down, lower your expectations, that would be great. I'm Ellie. Hello. Yes. Thank you for coming. Good night. I'm joking. So funny. Sorry, it's supposed to be scary. I am the director of Blackshaw Theatre Company. We've put this evening's entertainment together for you, and we have a fantastic lineup of some fabulous people to tell you some terrifying tales. This evening is being recorded for our podcast, so you can listen again if you so desire, or you can just play it at all of your nearest and dearest and point and laugh at them for not having been there in person. That's what I do regularly to my mum, who's not here. I know, I take it as a clear sign that she doesn't love me anymore, so... But that's okay, I don't like to bring my personal issues to the stage. I will be interjecting between scary stories this evening to reassure you all with my comfortable, soothing tone. It's not usually quite this deep. I have... got a cold. I know, but I've been told that I just sound super sexy and jazzy, so going with that. Thanks. Oh, I just broke it there. No, not good. I'm hoping to stay at smooth and jazzy and stay away from 14-year-old choir boy, so it's a good rule for life in general. Nothing was ever proved. It's fine. So, on that note, I actually have written down strict timings for myself because I tend to go off topic. Our first piece of the evening I'm very excited about. The wonderful Molly Beth Morosa is here to tell us a tale. And I have here two beautiful flyers for two other endeavours she has undertaken. I know, right? This lady is busy. And you can see those at this very horror festival, which is very exciting. So there's the Truncated Nightmare Hour. That's the wrong... I'm doing this really well. Truncated Nightmare Hour. So that's probably scary. I mean, I'm just taking a wild guess here. And that it actually looks brilliant. I'm probably going to go. Not that that should influence any of your decision-making. I make terrible decisions. That is running from Monday the 24th to Friday the 28th of October. Very exciting. And there's also Growing House, which is mentioned in this pre-prepared blurb that was not provided by me, so it will be sensible. Okay. Molly Beth Marosa, mistress of the macabre, is a writer, theatre maker and performer who delights in enchanting and disgusting her audiences in equal measure. Performing an extract from her upcoming London Horror Festival show, Grey Wing House, 27th of October, 7 p.m, she'd like to tell you a tale about a girl, a tea party, and a special friend. This is Lucy's Tea Party.
Being a child is a wonderful thing. You can run, you can jump, you can laugh, dance, and sing. Endless fun can be had, and whole days you can spend just laughing and joking and japing with friends. But Lucy Malloy never had so much luck. She was always alone, by herself. She was stuck in a hollow old house with her games and her toys, where she tried to block out all the fuss and the noise. The boys and the girls all thought Lucy was queer. They'd laugh, and they'd point, and they'd snarl, and they'd jeer. No, Lucy was happiest when left on her own, in her room, playing tea party, quiet, alone. Alone save her toys, who'd attend her soirees. Her dolls and her bears would all sit there for days. More tea, Mr. Squeaks, the mouse kindly declined. It is a great party, old Ted, you're too kind. Her mother and father were very concerned, so they went to the doctor, and when they returned, they explained to her, Lucy, the doc recommends that you go out and be nice and try to make friends. Making friends? Well, the idea made her uneasy. Well, that's putting it lightly, it made her feel queasy. It was all just too much. It drove her around the bend when faced with the prospect of making a friend. No, she'd much rather stay where they wouldn't make fun. They'd call her a freak. They'd throw stones and they'd run. No, staying alone seemed a much better scheme. She'd pour pretend tea, spread pretend scones with cream. One day, as she handed her stuffed cat a cup, Lucy felt quite unwell, and without looking up, she could sense there was now someone sat to her right. As dread thumped in her veins, her eyes snapped shut tight. Hello, Lucy. I'm Evelyn. A sweet, soft voice cooed. May I have some tea? I don't mean to intrude. Carefully opening one of her eyes, there she saw a young girl. Much to her surprise, Lucy blinked blankly, quite stricken with awe, see where Evelyn was now. She had not been before. Evelyn looked strange, looked a faint shade of blue. Her hair dank and dark, her lips purplish in hue. Her smile was too wide and showed needle-like teeth. Her skin paper thin, something moved underneath. Lucy looked in her eyes, large, obsidian, black. And in their reflections, her own eyes stared back. And that's when the teacups all started to crack. And that's when the teacups all started to crack. Now in the asylum and strapped to her bed, the only friends Lucy has are the ones in her head. She has one best friend, always there by her side, holding hands, sipping tea, and smiling too wide.
Well, Lucy sounds delightful. What a gal. Our next piece comes with a gentle warning. There is audience participation. But it means you're part of a team. You are the chosen ones. I mean, I don't know which of you, but some of you will be the chosen ones. It will be uplifting, and you will not be asked to do anything that Dave would not do himself, which I don't think is that reassuring. So up next, we have Dave Bibby. The following piece is an extract from Nobody Puts Bibby in the Corner. A new one-hour solo sketch, song, and storytelling show from self-proclaimed showbiz legend Dave Bibby. Dave is an actor, comedian, and award-winning storyteller. Doesn't say what award, though. I feel like it might have been self-awarded. The following story is a work in progress. This is Chug Life.
Thanks very much. Yes, it was a shit award. Good evening. Yeah, so I'm Dave Bibby. I'm going to be telling you a story. It's a true story based on a real life event that happened to me. And I was kind of watching you as you came in. I need to borrow just a couple of people. It's a very crowded place and I can't do it on my own. I need someone really tall. Someone, guy over here, you're quite tall. You're quite tall, yeah. Yeah, good. I mean, anyone's tall to me. That's perfect. Brilliant. Tall man, come down here. You're going to play one of those living statues, you know, that you find on the South Bank. Oh, yeah, bring that, mate. Yeah. Oh, you'll need that. Yeah, you can't get 5-minute story without a drink. Are you mad? Bring it with you. Then the other thing I need is someone who could play like an Aussie, a gruff Australian promoting paintball. Who could do that? Who would be good at that, do you think? Who? Yes, perfect. Yeah, yeah. Yes, you come on down. Give a big round of applause. Well done. Well done. That's good. So you're one of those, you know, street statues. So just kind of pick a pose where you won't get cramp. It will go from there. Yes, drinking pose, strong. And you're this like gruff Aussie geezer. That's not an Australian accent. You actually Australian? Oh, perfect. Good. So I'm so good at casting. This is brilliant. You're promoting paintball. So you've got a gun. You got your gun? Oh, yes. Okay, this. Do you know what chuggers are? Chuggers, charity muggers. Okay. So this is called Chug Life. He's going to be good. Okay. The other day, I came out of Covent Garden Station with a couple of mates to find an army of people busking and begging for money. They included a tramp selling the big issue, several chuggers, and a few of those living statues sprayed head to toe in silver and gold paint. There was a man and a woman in giant cow costumes, a couple of freaky clowns. There was a juggler, a busking guitarist, stilt walkers, two Aussie blokes promoting paintball, and David Bowie, exactly as he was in the film Labyrinth. Now, I only came for a quiet pint with my mates, Matt and Lee, but these street scroungers had other ideas. Oblivious to the danger they posed, I gestured for Matt and Lee to head to the safe zone of the pub at the far end of the piazza while I popped to the cash machine. Now, I was wearing my favourite Thundercats t-shirt, and as I stood at the cash point, I could hear a suspicious whisper whistle around the streets. Thundercat, I'm going to Thundercat, get low, my little... Thundercats, get loads of money out. Thundercats, get a Thundercat. It's very good. Unbeknownst to me, I had been singled out by the street scroungers as a weak target. While I obliviously withdrew my hard-earned cash, the street urchins readied themselves for the catch of the day. One of the living statues turned a beady eye my way as the rest of his body remained motionless. One of the Aussie blokes clicked some bullets into the chamber of his rifles. As I turn around, I see that they have all joined forces and formed a formation that blocked all routes through to my mates and my cold pint in the pub beyond. I look on. It's very good, isn't it? Very good. Where is he? He's street trousers and there's a pub. He's a lad. Yes, very good. Okay, good. I go to run in the opposite direction, but a couple of pumped up personal trainers from LA Fitness are immediately behind me. Join the fucking gym? No! Shocked, I stumble backwards and trip on the cobbled streets. I see the chuggers running towards me, sharpening their clipboards. In the distance, I see Matt and Lee holding out my cold pint in the pub window. They look on, petrified, as the previously immobile street statues creak their necks and come to life, slowly trudging their way towards me, but stopping a safe distance, because he's really too good at it, isn't he? I scramble to my feet and shake off the attentions of the LA Fitness feckers. I spin out of the tackle of a couple of heavily padded charity chuggers and then dodge several missiles directed at me by a juggler like Oddjob on a mission. 1, 2, 3! 1, 2, 3! Fuck off! I then start running and I run into an old lady who begins to hit me with a stick. Go on, go for it. Oh, yes, yeah. I start running with my wallet tucked under my arm like a wide receiver. Then I go to take Haven in a nearby shop, but the shopkeeper locks the door before I can get there. I plead for her to allow me inside. Let me in the fucking shop! But she is too frightened to do so. No. As I turn in slow motion, I see a busker swinging his guitar at my head. Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam. Bam! And deliver an E to the busker's balls and start running once more. I'm now halfway to my target, dodging in and out of chuggers and tourists alike. But then those two giant cows are bearing down on me and I become trapped against the window of the Apple store. I manage to struggle half past them, but then... Oh, sorry, that hand. Oh, don't want to spill the drink. Then I'm collared by a giant alien on stilts. He picks me up by the scruff of my collar. Ugh. And I dangle helplessly in it. Should have put a bit of pants on. I dangle like a pinata in the giant's grip. Suddenly, everything pauses and goes silent as Theresa May crosses the street with Donald Trump's sons on a leash. Breathing. Breathing. And the heartbeat. Is it mine? It's all I can hear as I struggle to wriggle free from the giant alien's grip. But in the distance, I see Matt and Lee have appeared from the pub. Where's Lee? There he is! Come on, Lee! Lee, is it you? Nope, you run away. You look like my friend Lee. Perfect, yeah. I'm there. You step that way. But Lee, come stand right here. That's the perfect dramatic place for you. Right. Oh, I brought a prop. Forgot to use it. One prop. Literally forgot it. Okay, Lee... Lee, right at the back, it's more dramatic. Keep, oh, fuck off, go on. Right. This is very good, he's like the crow. Lee is in open space, calling for the pass. Very good, yeah. I draw back my arm and send a long throw towards him. The beggars look upwards as the wallet floats over them. Lee's hands are directed skywards, sort of curled. He's ready to take the catch. A smile creeps across his face, but just before he does so, he is shut down in a rain of gunfire by the paintballing Aussies. What have you got, a spud gun? Make some noise.
Got a deal of a century, mate. Come along.
Very good. He never stops selling, never stops selling. Lee goes down like a multicoloured Willem Dafoe in Platoon. That's very good. The wallet is now lying on the ground and is there for the taking. Now Matt, the tramp, is favourite to get to it. But before he does so, Matt distracts him with a 3-litre bottle of white cider. Who wants some cider? Let's all get some cider. The tramp can't resist and hypnotically walks towards the juicy lightning like a zombie possessed. Suddenly, Matt flicks it up and decapitates him with it. This is a true story. The wallet...
I forgot to say, you die really early on. You come on, you die. It's rubbish part, really. I think he did really well, though.
The wallet is now lying on the ground and is there for the taking. Matt picks it up and runs towards me. He beats off the attention of one of the remaining chuggers and beats up a snake charmer. Sorry, I'm late. What are you doing here? Go away. And he slams. I'm free from this guy. He turned out to be a bit of a pussy. So, just got bored of him. So he slams the wallet. Sorry, mate. It's a really nice guy. He slams all it into my bread basket, pats me on the back, and tells me to run like the wind, Bibby. He fights off a few chuggers, and then a fire breather exhales towards him. And he is brought down in a blaze of fire and smoke. And then the Aussie bloke, he's like, yeah, he kicks him. Sure. And then this guy walks up, and he used to watch wrestling, and he elbow drops him. Hold your pint. Sure. Oh, sure. Yes. Very good. Very good. Very good. I mean, you would have thought about it all night. If you could not have tapped your elbow, you'd have regretted that. So well done, you. Well done. So I now run. I run like the wind, like Jonah Lomu in his pomp. The people are cheering me on. They're erecting banners that read, go, Thundercat, go. They're all screaming, go, Thundercat, go. Go, Thundercat, go. This one woman has some great advice for me.
Go, Thundercat, go.
It's similar to what everyone else is saying. But it's strong. I'm almost there. I can see the light. Strangers are cheering me on as I turn and smile. A puppeteer releases an army of Punch and Judies, and they swarm the streets like a plague of locusts. I'm taken down like a sexy dolphin. Sorry. Oh, you're doing well. As I become tangled in their wires, I'm down, and I cannot escape. Exhausted, I stopped struggling. I gave in. The puppet master stands over me, picks up my wallet. He withdraws the hard-earned cash. And as he slams my wallet down at me, he says, Thundercat. More like Thunder Twat. Thanks very much. It's been a lovely time. Well done, these guys. Lovely to meet you. Well done, you. You were good. You were great. Well done. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. So, yeah. Here you go. Thanks very much. Thank you. Well done.
Well, I kind of feel like I should take back what I said about the lack of award likelihood, because that was pretty good. I won't go further than pretty good, but it was pretty good. Next up... So that was scary, but it was funny, right? So you all had a good giggle. This next one's going to shit you right up, okay? Because when I went through the submissions, because I had that wonderful task along with some of my colleagues, I actually had to stop reading some of them because I got a little bit scared. And that was how I decided which ones to put on. So this next one did scare me a little bit. I didn't have to go to the lengths of like putting it in the freezer. No, got like three people who've ever watched Friends. Brilliant. What is the chances of that? Where have the rest of you been? Like in a hole for the last 20 years? Good Lord. Have you heard of the Spice Girls? They're pretty big. No? No one liking that 1996 reference? Man, I love the Spice Girls. Not anymore. I mean, they're terrible now. Right? No, I hear Jerry Halliwell's pregnant again, so congrats. That's lovely. Okay. So this next piece is... Good Lord. I mean, I think it's... We've got enough smoke now. He does this all the time. He carries that round with him. It's weird. Doesn't go down well on the tube, I can tell you. Oh, awkward. So, this is Ben Whitehead, who says... This is me doing my Ben impression. It's going to be the same voice as what I'm doing right now, okay? I'm used to performing in character, but will tell this straight as myself because it's something that happened to me. Based on a real story. While the incident no longer gives me nightmares, no longer gives him nightmares, the prospect of standing on stage without hiding behind a character mask scares the shit out of me. So please give a very warm welcome to Ben Whitehead.
Several years ago, I went on holiday to Crete. It was was a touring trip. I went with my girlfriend at the time. I'm not going to mention her name, just for the purposes of telling the story. It's not out of disrespect or any animosity or anything like that. It doesn't seem like it's the thing to do. To be honest with you, it was a bit of a make or break holiday, and in fact, we ended our relationship just shortly after we returned from the island. It was a good holiday, a plan that we had. We flew into Heraklion. Do you know Crete? Anyone know Crete? It's very nice. I mean, I'd recommend you go, but you probably can't afford to at the moment. So it was a hire car job from the airport, driving down the island, taking in Knossos, the Minoan settlement, crossing the plateau, the windswept plateau. Is very beautiful. All the time enjoying the hospitality, which is, 32 courses, and that's just at breakfast time. We got down to the coast and stayed in a place called Lutro, which was beautiful. You had to walk there or get a boat. You couldn't drive there. And then we had sort of one stop to make before we got to Chania and the flight home. And I picked this place called Franga Castello. And I picked it because it had a history, but more importantly for me, it had a ghost story to it as well. It's a fort that they built. The Venetians built it 700 years ago, apparently to warn off pirates. And there's a little sort of settlement now around the fort, a taverna and some holiday houses and things like that. In the 1800s, I'm getting to the ghost bit soon, by the way, just to like, in the 1800s, it was the scene of a siege, and 600 Greek soldiers were in the fort trying to hold off against 8,000 Turkish invaders. And they lost, obviously, against that numbers. Half of them died, the other half surrendered. And it is the 300 or so who died that they do say you can see on a misty dawn walking along the beach and disappearing once they get to the fort. Now, because of their shadowy, misty-like appearance, they are called locally, and forgive my pronunciation, the Trosolets, translated as the Dewy Ones, which is much more scary. Now, people tell ghost stories for different reasons. And the old days, they'd tell them to keep you away from somewhere some of the times. They also tell them to make you come to somewhere, and that's certainly the case with Franga Castello, because that's certainly what drew me there. There's of course, a local thing that maybe they want these people remembered who died there in such great number. And there, of course, is also the way of just tarting up what is a pretty explainable meteorological phenomenon. The Dewy Ones, so-called, can be explained just by the refraction. I mean, it's the sun rays in the morning refracting off the mist, and as it rolls in, it makes it look just like people walking along. Well, a little bit like people walking along, anyway. The tellers of these tales will say to you, well, if you have so much death in one place, it's bound to leave some kind of supernatural legacy on the site. And this might manifest through a ghost army walking up the beach, but it also maybe other ways that hauntings, shall we say, can take place. So we did the tourist bit and went to the castle and looked around it. I got myself in a Larry David situation, which is a completely different story, I'll say for another time. We realized we needed to find some lodgings, and it was getting towards sunset, so we checked into it, and there was plenty of availability in these beautiful old cottages there. They used to belong to the fishermen, and indeed one of them would have been for the miller because there was an old windmill there, which had also been renovated into a holiday let as well. So we checked into our accommodation, and it was standard holiday let on the inside, tiled floors, ensuite bathrooms, basic lighting. We know that, by the way, because when I turned on the bedside lamp, the bulb blew immediately, so we only had the main light. We went off, went to the Trosolets Taverna for dinner, and then when we come back, the one thing I really realized is that the nice sea breeze we'd had all day had picked up into a pretty stiff, robust, even wind, and I should have realized there was a windmill there. It was going to get a little bit windy at some point. So we start settling down for the night, and it's blowing hard outside, and the shutters, we've got the shutters closed, are sort of, you know, banging slightly. It's a bit creepy, obviously, especially with all these ghost stories going around my head. So we have the situation, of course, when the light goes out, you've then got to get into bed. It's pitch dark as soon as the light goes out, and I've got to try and get to bed without stubbing my toe on various things along the way. And then once lying in bed, the wind outside is incredible. I mean, it's really howling horror film wind going on outside. It's totally dark. And I'm not going to say to my girlfriend, I'm scared, but I was. So we just sort of like, held hands and gave each other a squeeze and then tried to get to sleep. And it was obviously comforting enough because I dropped off. When I woke up, there was a banging coming from upstairs. Now, it was the shutter, I guess, from the window had come open. There was no one staying up there, otherwise they would have closed it. But it wasn't a repetitive, rhythmic bang. It was all over the place. It was a jazz shutter just going for it. And it was jazz laughing, but I was very scared at the time. But once again, not wanting to show it, I just sort of got to went like, I just hope my girlfriend's awake. I want someone else to be awake as well. So we give it. I had to squeeze, and she squeezed back. And I was like, oh, thank God. And I managed to get off to sleep again. And I woke up again, I don't know how long later, and this time, dead silence. The wind has gone. There's no noise at all from outside. There's no banging shutter. It's total silence. And it's even more scary. And I get the only thing I can hear is my heart beating, basically. And I know my girlfriend's scared as well. Because she's squeezing my hand. And I'm very, you know, concerned. Thinking, that's okay, I'll just squeeze you back, it's fine. And then I hear a noise. And there's someone in the room. Specifically, there's someone in the bathroom. There's someone moving around in the bathroom. And I just froze, and I'm like, okay, I'm just about to say to my girlfriend, I think there's someone in the bathroom. And before I do it, she's squeezing my hand like crazy, and she's got this grip on me, and she's starting to dig her fingernails in, and I'm thinking, okay, okay, let go. And she digs them in further and further and further, and I think it's starting to break the skin. So I'm wrench my arm away, sort of thinking, well, she must be asleep. She can't realize how much pain she's causing me now. I had to turn my whole body over to the side just to release my grip, and that kind of put me out of bed. So I'm nearly fallen half out of bed here, get one knee on the floor. And I'm like just about to say to her, I think there's someone in the bathroom. When the door of the bathroom opens, and the dim light from inside the bathroom floods out the room, and this shadowy figure emerges from the bathroom. And it's my girlfriend. She turns on the light, and I'm obviously can't open my eyes because all of a sudden it's so bright. I'm there holding my hands in pain. And she asked me what's wrong, and I just look at the bed, and it's empty. Like I said, people tell ghost stories for different reasons. Thank you.
I thought I'd give you all that time to recover. Oh, good. Anyone else got sweaty hands? No? Good. Right, so moving on to another terrifying story. This is The Flat Upstairs by Paul Joseph, who is the producer and DJ for Pop Horror, London's new entertainment night that merges pop music and horror movies. It's well named, I have to say. Pop Horror. That is excellent. His show, Brexit Chainsaw Massacre, topical, was on earlier this evening in this very venue. Paul also writes and has been involved in film producing. Paul's piece, The Flat Upstairs, is inspired by his own experience many years ago working as a housing officer in East London.
September 25th, 2016. Attention, Miss Dolly King, Housing Services Manager, China Walk Estate. Dear Miss King, I'm writing following my letter dated the 14th of September with regard to the flat above me. The noise issue has not abated. I'm often disturbed around 3 a.m. by a persistent scratching noise from the room above my bedroom, which I believe must be the living room of flat 35. I can also hear footsteps moving around throughout the night that I'm sure they're from several more persons than one would expect to be the occupants of a two-bedroom flat. The noise from upstairs is affecting my sleep. Because of my health condition, I cannot go upstairs to speak to the occupants. Please, can you look into this matter and take whatever action is appropriate? Should you wish to speak to me, you can telephone me on 0207 253 3400. Please note I switched the phone to silent after 8:30 p.m. Yours sincerely, Mr. Arthur Benedict, tenant, flat 25, Dalton House. 7th of October, 2016. Dear Miss King, I'm disappointed to have not received a response from my last letter, dated 25th of September. I believe the expected response time of 7 working days has now elapsed. The purpose of this letter, however, is not to complain about this, but to rather remind you of the concerning activity emanating from the property above mine, flat 35. Last night, the 6th of October, I was subjected to the slamming of doors for approximately 4 hours from 10:45 p.m. This was accompanied by a sporadic, low, growling sound, which is clearly an infringement of the block's no pets policy. I fear the property is being used for some nefarious activities, perhaps illegal dog breeding or the cultivation of narcotics. I've lived in this property for 27 years and benefited from a harmonious living environment. I am now nightly subject to a range of deeply antisocial activities. Please, can you take the relevant steps to resolve this matter? Or shall I have to take it to my local councillor? Yours sincerely, Mr. Arthur Benedict. 12th of October 2016. Dear Miss King, I'm writing with an update on the situation with the antisocial neighbours in the flat upstairs. I haven't ever experienced such inconsiderate behaviour. I take mercy my poor wife is no longer around, as this would have terrified her. Only last night there was a tapping coming from the ceiling above my head throughout most of the night. Why is someone doing this? They must know there's a flat below them. I fear the current situation is detrimental to my health and my right to quiet enjoyment of my own residence. Please look into this matter at your earliest convenience. Yours sincerely, Mr. Arthur Benedict. 14th of October 2016. Dear Miss King, I'm writing to you at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm wide awake because of the constant tapping right above my bed. I can also hear growling and scratching noises and the footsteps I mentioned previously. Who are these people and why are they doing this to me? They must know I'm a pensioner. I do not know why you're ignoring my complaint. The lady at the library said I should email my letter to you, but I'm worried it will get lost. Please make this noise stop. 15th of October 2016. Dear Miss King, I can hear them whispering my name all through the night. I don't know if you have told them of my complaint, but I'm scared they mean to harm me. Their voices are not kind. They keep saying my name. This is harassment and needs to stop. Please make it stop. 16th of October, 2016. Dear Miss King, I'm a prisoner in my own flat. They know I'm here and they're calling my name. They're coming for me. The dogs upstairs, the people, the footsteps. I can't get out. Please help. 17th of October, 2016. Dear Miss King, I'm too scared to breathe, too tired to sleep. They, them, it, whatever's upstairs, they're tormenting me. They're going to hurt me. They want to hurt me. I'm trapped. I'm trapped. I'm trapped. Help me. 4th of November, 2016. Dear Mrs. Benedict, thank you very much for the card and chocolates you sent. It was very kind of you, and myself and the other nursing staff do appreciate it. We're very sorry that you were unable to return for your Uncle Arthur's funeral, but as you said, it is a very long way. As you asked us to, we have donated his clothes to a local charity. Please find enclosed the few remaining personal effects, which are some photographs and postcards. I also found a box with several envelopes addressed to a Dolly King. This name isn't one that appears on Arthur's record, so I'm forwarding them on to you, as you may know who Dolly King is, or if not, choose to dispose of them accordingly. Again, please accept our deepest condolences for your loss. But please be assured, Arthur was very comfortable and content here right up until his passing. Though he was only in the home a few months, he was a popular and respected resident. Very best wishes, Isabel Deckard, staff nurse, St. Anne's Nursing Facility.
This next piece is called Skag and Bone Man. It's going to be performed by Stuart Vincent, and it comes from Stack 10 Theatre Company, who were founded in Chiswick, which is the home of horror. Now, I've never been to Chiswick, but I'd quite like to now, and I want to know more. I might Wikipedia it later. Other search engine type information places are available. These stories come from the mind of their associate writer and the voices of their actors. I've become disjointed in my comparing style because I'm getting increasingly frightened. But yes, this is going to be more frightening, and this will break down further. So Skag and Bone Man, performed by Stuart Vincent.
If you don't go to bed, the Skag and Bone Man will get you. If you don't do your work, the Skag and Bone Man will get you. You'll hear him coming, boot heels crunching on the tower block stairs, bones rattling in his coat pocket. The little bones of bad boys and girls who don't behave and make him cross. You never make the Skag and Bone Man cross. For a week, Younger stood on a tower block stairs, dealing like a good soldier, a good Younger to the Scarboroughs, the glazed-eyed junkies looking more like Haitian zombies rather than criminals and people. And Younger knew what time was coming. His brother Ash already told him, you work a week for them and then they get you robbed. But why? Because they own you. And once they own you, you got to work all hours a week to pay off that debt, 25 to 8, fam. So Younger worked all week, dealing out that heroin and no cocaine to the Scarbers, watching time slip away, second minutes, hours, days. Ash promised him he would be safe. As long as he don't act like a bad man, he'd be fine. He'd get robbed, and that was that. It is what it is. But Younger didn't like the idea of being owned. He was no one's bitch. He wasn't going to get robbed. Younger had a plan. Friday morning, while Ash was sleeping on Thursday night, Younger crept into his bedroom, opened up his cupboard doors. Underneath a pile of dirty magazines, one to one or make you come, was Ash's 9mm. Yes, took the gun, slipped it behind his back, hot and sharp against his flesh. That day, he saw the two rude boys coming a mile off, bopping their way up the stairs, walking that walk as if one leg wasn't working. The two rude boys were talking about one of them local girls. She went to her boyfriend's house the night before. And when she got there, three boys jumped out and she had to give a lineup, part of the initiation. One of the rude boys stopped the conversation to whistle out a Younger, psst, one of each, bruv. But these weren't no zombies. They didn't have no need in their eyes. The slow, shuffling movements of a clucking junkie, nah. They weren't interested in one of each. They were interested in Younger. Younger slipped one hand behind his back, holding onto the 9mm. The two rude boys were on the same level. One of them grabbed him, went into his pocket to pick out a machete until he was clocked with a 9mm right in his face. Two rude boys stood still. Back up! Put the gun down, bruv. Younger thinking of what to say next. Put the blade back, bruv. I ain't your bitch, I ain't no one's bitch. And I'll shoot you, I swear to God I will. Now put the blade back and walk away. You just made a mistake, little man. He ain't gonna like this. He's gonna come for you himself. Who? The Skag and Bone Man. Younger felt the dread rise up. The floor swam, the eyes blurring around the edges. Younger went back against the wall and dropped to the floor till he looked like a clucking junkie. the Skag and Bowman. His long coat, black as night, black as pitch, the obsidian black of the ever after that was filled with the bones of the poor bastards who crossed the Skag and Bowman. You never make the Skag and Bowman cross. Younger jumped to his feet. He ran up the stairs. The 9mm fell out of his pocket onto the floor. He left it there. What use is a 9mm against the Skag and Bowman? One step, two step, three step, four step, five step. If he kept moving, maybe he'd be safe. Six step, seven step, back to his flat. Eight step, into his bed. Nine step, underneath the duvet. 10 step, safe. 11 step, nah. Too late. Younger froze. From down below the tower block stairs, Younger heard the footsteps. His footsteps. The boots on the floor crushing the bones beneath him. Younger couldn't move, couldn't force his limbs to obey the overthinking thought of his head screaming, run, run, run! Younger looked over the balcony. Who's there? The bull rogue. Younger's heart skipped a beat. From down below, he saw a hand come into sight and grab onto the railing. The hand was scraped and flayed, beringed with bone-white ice, twisted and wrapped around the fingers, which then was topped with pointed fingernails that clutched onto that railing. Younger ran up the stairs. He slipped. He fell to the floor. He heard the footsteps running up after him, dogs barking, another bone ring snapping. Something flew over Younger's head. It dropped against the wall, and then shards of brick went all over his face. Younger glanced over his shoulder to see the heat haze rising between him and him. Younger tried to speak, but all he could hear was the sound of the children crying and the bones crunching. You seeing duppies? You hearing them hounds yet? You know you're done when you hear them hounds. The hands wrapped around Younger's head pulled his face in. Hot and rancid breath, singed with nicotine, filled up his nose. Should I whistle? You know you're done. No? You want to live? What would you give me to let you live, little man? Younger closed his eyes, trying to speak, but at the same time trying not to vomit. Anything. Anything. What about everything? Tell me something, boy. Do you believe in the soul?
That was very good. This next piece comes from Ed Bailey. It's called At the Edge. Ed is an actor, writer, father, and songwriter who spent some time traveling in China as a young man. He was taught to fish by his grandfather, which is a relevant fact when you hear the story.
A hungry young traveller stops at the side of a lake to fish. Cold and still, he casts out, settles himself as best he can on the hard, grey, pebbled shore, and waits for a bite.
You won't catch here!
A voice from the mist, somewhere. Somewhere. There. A small old man on a small flat boat, drifting just past his line, just past. A soft crunch as it comes to shore. Old wood on ancient stone. Up he stands, and monk-like approaches. You won't catch here. Not anymore. And as he folds himself back into his sackcloth, a breathing boulder amongst the pebbles, the old man tells his story. Not too long ago, in a poor, poor village, High in the hills above the lake, there lived a beautiful young widow. Blessed and cursed she was. Blessed and cursed. Blessed with her two daughters, who clung to her legs, sheltered from the world by the warm shadow of her love. Cursed with the gift of foresight. Cursed, for she could only foresee one moment. The end. Her end. The moment she would die. The visions came at night. She felt the sharp blow against her head, the searing heat of pain, the cold, hard splash. As she broke through the icy water, she heard the cries of her still young children from the shore. Mama! Mama! She saw the glassy stillness beneath her as she drifted down, already lifeless, to nestle in the weeds and stones. Mama! Mama! This she saw, and this she knew would be her fate, a sudden, bloody, painful end, with no one to care for them, a cursed, cursed gift of foresight, and she cried out in the night for someone strong she once knew. Mama, Mama. But she had no family, except her two beloved daughters, and she was scared they'd starve when she was gone. Still innocent and still unable to feed themselves. So scared, she married the first man who asked her. Now, they said he was handsome and hard-working. They said he had a strong back and many of his own teeth. They said he could provide, but nobody said he was scared too. Nobody said that he hid his fear in the bottle and in the belt and in the lines on her back. And the bruises in her ribs. Nobody said. And she cried in the night, cold, hard tears. She did not love him. She could not love him. But she stayed with him for her children, only for her children, so they would eat when she was gone. But the children would say, Mama, Mama, won't you leave him? Leave him, leave him. He beats you, Mama. Why won't you leave him? Leave him, Mama. But she hushed them and calmed them and put them to bed. We are husband and wife, and you are my children. We are a family now. We have to take care of things. We have to take care of each other. The children whispered in the night. She loves him. We cannot break the spell. But he beats us too. We cannot tell, or we'd break her heart and go to hell. For 3 long years they lived this life. The children clung to their mother's love. The mother held on to her tormenting hope. The husband beat her when he pleased, and the children when she could not see. He waited on his investment. 2 daughters such as these would one day fetch a great price in the city. 2 daughters without a mother. Mama, Mama, won't you leave him? Leave him, leave him. He beats you, Mama. Why won't you leave him? And her eyes, her beautiful eyes, welled up with tears, warm tears, tears of love for her children. I know you want to protect me, my little ones, but that's for me to do. I protect you. There's more to love than you can know. You're only children, and your love is innocent. I have to think about the future. She loves him, and we cannot break the spell. But he beats us too, and we cannot tell. Or we'd break her heart and go to hell. Now the young woman knew her fate was drawing close. Her visions were clear. She would die while her children were still young. And they were growing, and they would not be young for very long. Her time was running from her like the floods in spring. It was a cold, still winter's day. Much like today, when her husband grabbed her roughly by the arm, dragged her into the garden and whispered, hard as a blade in her ear, "We're going fishing! Tell the children we're going to the lake. A little surprise."
She gathered her children together. And perhaps she couldn't hide the fear in her eyes. "Mama," they said, what's the matter?" "Nothing, my little ones. We're going to the lake, a surprise." And for the last time they said, "Mama, Mama, won't you leave him? Leave him, leave him. He beats you, Mama. Why won't you leave him?" And for the last time her eyes misted over with warm, soft, loving tears. He sat way over there to fish. In those days it was good fishing all over this lake. Nothing upset the fish, except being caught and killed, I suppose. Except being caught and killed. The children stayed here, sat right where we are. Their mother sat a little way off, alone. She stared at the water. All she could do was stare at the water, remembering her vision over and over. The children sat and talked. They gently tossed stones into the water. They looked at their mother, and they watched their stepfather. But mostly, they talked. They whispered amongst themselves. They wept a little. They argued. They jostled. They did what children do. As the day wore on, their hunger grew and their childish chat grew calmer and wearier. If you could see them sat here now, you'd see them quite still. The eldest talking slowly, the younger one listening and nodding. From over there, you might think you could see two politicians making plans or generals making war, but they were only children worried about Mama. "She loves him, but we must break the spell. We must free her from this hell." Darkness began to close in around the children. Night crept towards their cruel stepfather, an empty silhouette in the half-light. And the moon rose above their beautiful mother, a still and calm reflection in the lake. Darkness closed in on them all. "Ah!" Their mother looked up with a start. "Am I dead? Have I been dreaming? No. The lake. I've thought of nothing but death all day. My children. Where are my children?" She looked across to where they'd been sitting, but there was no sign of them. She scanned the shoreline for figures in the dusk, but she could see none. Not the children. Not their father. Only the outline of his fishing rod. No figure of a man, just the rod, left to fish alone. She hurried to stand, but sitting all day, she was slow to rise and uneasy on her feet. "My little ones, my little ones," she cried. "Where are you, my little ones? What have you done to my little ones?" She screamed across the lake to the lonely fishing rod. "Mama!" behind her. A voice in the gloom. "Mama, my little ones, my children, my darlings, everything's okay. I'm here. Everything's okay." And a sudden sharp blow smashed against her head. The heat of pain filled her as her body froze. Blood rushed down, hot over her eyes. She heard her eldest cry out, "Mama, there's too much pain." And she staggered backwards, stumbling to the edge. And through her blurring vision, she saw one last glimpse of her beloved children, the smallest with her hand held to her mouth. The eldest, still with her arm raised, a crimson-tipped stone clasped tightly in her soft little hand. And she sings, she thinks she sees tears in their eyes. And as she sinks away from them, she thinks she hears them say, "We'll be okay." And we never saw her again. And we never saw the children again. And we never saw the stepfather again. Some of the young people say,
gave up fishing before night fell and went to town to make his fortune some easier way. But nobody knows. The fish don't tell. She died right here, asked the young traveller, cold and still very hungry. And the old man, creaking to his feet, replied, "You won't catch here. Not anymore."
This next piece is another from Stack 10 Theatre. It's being performed by Karis King. And I have the same introduction as I gave earlier. So just to recap, Chiswick, Home of Horror. And both pieces are written by Ed Hartland. Enjoy.
I was a film projectionist back in the day when it was, you know, real film being projected on the screen. In the real good old days, film was dangerous. You know, we're talking flammable, combustible shit. You know, that stuff that would, you know, burn underwater. And when I first moved to St. Anne's in 1960, they had this little picture house called The Phoenix. It wasn't more than 5 years old when I started working there. I'd been working there a couple of months when I first saw her. I was loading up the next reel of film, and then I heard this rustling just behind me. And I turned around, and this girl was stood behind me. She was in a pretty pink dress, matching bow in her hair. And I told her she had to leave. Wasn't fooling when I said film was dangerous shit. And the girl turned around, and as she did, I got hit by this smell, like burning rubber that someone's used to cook meat that's gone rancid with maggots and rot. And the back of this girl's dress was burning away, cloth melting and melding with skin, blisters bubbling up and down the curve of her spine, and she walked out of the booth, and she was gone. And I told someone about it, and they told me about the fire. Middlesex Gazette, December 31st, 1955. Here, scores of children dead in cinema fire panic. At least 69 persons, most of them children, between the ages of 5 and 14, perished today in a panic fire in the projection room. The children ran from the doors to get away from the flames, screaming to be let out, but the doors had to be pulled open from the inside. And those children were so tightly pressed up to the doors that they couldn't be opened. The Phoenix rose from the ashes of the Empire Cinema. And it was like people forgot. In 5 years, this place forgot about a fire that killed 69 people. 70 if you include the projectionist who cut crosses into his wrists with a Gillette blue blade the next day. And that's what this place does. It forgets, like the kids. Children disappear. It's a fact of life. Like cancer, it's shit and senseless. But, I mean, it is what it is, right? Children disappear. And sometimes they reappear. Sometimes just the bodies. Sometimes they're never seen again. My granddad, he used to say that children disappear a lot in this town. And he brought me up when my parents died and made sure I never went anywhere alone, which used to really piss me off until that girl from my school disappeared. So she used to walk home with another girl in my class. I think her name was Sarah or something. and this one day they said goodbye at the top of the avenue. And then that was the last time anyone saw her. And then, I have it here, the town literally went crazy. Middlesex Gazette, 2002. Three men dragged a teacher out of his house and hung him from a lamppost following the publication in a national newspaper of names supposedly on the sex register. Martin Russell was taken from his house, beaten, burned with cigarettes, and had several teeth pulled out before he was lynched. Children disappear a lot in this town. And I have no idea who took that girl back in 2002, but I do know this. Hey, my granddad had nothing to do with it. Hey, he was a pensioner researching this town's history. I mean, if research in the library had been where it ended, then you know, maybe nothing would have happened. But he started interviewing people. And he spoke to this one man who told him that his sister had been in the cinema fire in 55. Emily Norton. And her body was never found. And she was last seen wearing a pretty pink dress with a matching bow. It's like everywhere my granddad looked, there they were, or they weren't. These girls that disappear and then they're forgotten. Emily Norton in 55. That girl back in 2002. She was in my class, but I can't remember her name for the life of me. It's like it's just almost there, but it's just dancing out of memory. I mean, the only reason I remember Emily Norton is because it's in my granddad's notes, but give me half an hour and I probably will struggle to recall it. I'll probably say something like Emma Notten Schnotten or something. But yeah. They're always the same, you know. Blonde. Blue eyes. And then there was that girl on Falcon Street. She was a prostitute, barely in her teens. Blonde, blue eyes. And my granddad, he said he saw her on his way back from the library and it was on the night that it happened. And she was standing there. She was waiting for, I don't know, the next creep to pick her up. I know it's her. Whatever it is going on in this town that does this, I know it's going to take this girl. She looks just like me. She looks like me. Well, it looked. She looked like me. And I looked like that girl in my class, and she looked like Emily Norton, and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, I know what people say that my granddad did, but he was only trying to protect her. And the disappearances, I can show you, they keep going back further. There's always a little girl with blonde hair, always a scapegoat. Okay, the man that was lynched in 2002. Or the film projectionist. And my granddad. Hey, it just it keeps happening. And then this place, it just moves on and forgets and just sweeps it under the carpet. Enjoy your film.
I'm just going to end by telling a very short anecdote of my own, if you don't mind. I go on lots of family holidays to beautiful, beautiful properties run by the Landmark Trust. I recommend you look them up. They renovate very old properties that are falling down to their former glory. You can rent them as holiday homes. We were staying in one which was a beautiful Georgian manor house, sort of four floors, huge sweeping staircase, the works. And one day my family decided they were going to go out on some kind of excursion to see a film I wasn't interested in. Some weird stuff happened with a projectionist and some dead kids. So I'm glad I missed out on that. I decided to stay in the library, because there was a library in the house, of course, on the chaise longue. This is literally true, chaise longue in a library, watching 24. Anyone seen that, Jack Bauer? Super action-y. So I had a little DVD player, put my headphones on, house was completely empty. I'd obviously locked the doors, I'm not a fool. And I thought, it's fine, it's not spooky, it's fine, just shut all the doors, that's probably sensible. Put the headphones on, watching Jack Bauer and his adventures. And then suddenly, I thought I heard a noise. You know, you've got headphones on and you hear a noise outside of the headphone zone. You're not quite sure what it is, so I sort of just lifted one ear. And I could hear a strange sort of thudding noise coming from somewhere in the upper echelons of the house. And I thought, no, I'm just imagining it. It's just, it's fine. Turn up the volume. Carried on watching 24, but I couldn't quite concentrate, and that noise was persisting. So I took my headphones off and I properly listened. And I recognised the sound as a door slamming. But I hadn't initially realised that's what it was because it was so repetitive. And, you know, generally, if you're making a statement, you slam the door once. But this door, this definite door slam, was just happening over and over again. And I thought, right, well, I'm just going to check it out because that's fine. That's definitely not how you die in horror films, is checking it out on your own. So I slowly crept up these huge, sweeping stairs. And they were, of course, in a big sort of rounded spiral shape, so I couldn't actually see the top landing. But as I approached, this noise became clearer, and I could hear creak, slam, creak, slam. And it was with that kind of regular rhythm. And as I rounded the corner at the top of the stairs, I could see across the landing that it was the bathroom door. And it was just swinging slowly open, creak, slam. And then again, creak, slam. And I stood there at the top of the stairs for a minute and I thought, well, maybe there's a window open. There's a through breeze. That's a thing, that's science. And, you know, it's an old house. Maybe the door doesn't properly latch in the door frame. That's what it is. I'll just go and shut the window because that's science and what it is. And I kept saying that to myself as I slowly approached the door, which continued to swing open, creak, slam. And every time it opened, I got a bit of a better view of the bathroom. And as I slowly approached, I thought, it's fine, the bathroom's empty, there's nothing weird in there, I can see the bathroom. But it became clear to me that the bathroom window was very much closed. Not open. So science had failed me. But now I was too close to do anything but find the answer, right? I was literally like a hand grab away from the door. So as it creaked open again, creak, I put a hand out. And as it came back to slam shut, the force of it really took me by surprise, slammed against my hand. And I pushed back. And it really did feel like there was someone on the other side of the door pushing against me. But I won. And fully opened the door, stepped into the bathroom, ascertained window definitely, definitely, definitely shut, and then just stepped out of the bathroom again and shut the door behind me. And I pulled it really tight because the only other science left to me was that it wasn't properly latching in the door frame. But there was a very definite click when I pulled the door shut, so it wasn't that either. And I thought, okay, well, I've shut it now. It's shut. It's not opening and closing anymore. This is fine. But I am going to back away. I'm not going to turn around. Just back away to the stairs. And as I slowly backed away, the door slowly opened. Creak. And I can't tell you what was behind the door because I ran back down the stairs and shut all the doors behind me and then turned up Jack Bauer so loud my ears were bleeding. And, well, I'm here, so I'm fine.
but I wouldn't recommend exploring strange noises. In hindsight, I probably should have just left the house, phoned someone. I had a car there. I could have driven the car away. There were so many options open to me. So there we go. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you to all our contributors this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you all for giving your time. Thank you all for coming. We are Blackshaw Theatre Company. We do lots of other things. We do new writing nights. We do big productions. And we will be running lots of new writing nights next year. It is our year of the new writing night. So if you're a budding writer or if you know someone who is of any genre, it can be theatre, it can be poetry, comedy, a book, whatever it is, do look us up. You've got all our information on the back of your programmes. We're on the Twitter at Blackshaw Update, and you can sign up to our mailing list to be the first to hear about everything that's happening, including casting opportunities and more. So please do that. Thank you very much. ¶¶